Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about two videos that we uploaded this week that you saw, one in Hebrew, one in English, because they really, again, symbolize how important JTF's message is, how vital it is that we reach as many people as we can. And what a wonderful world this would be if only we could reach millions of people with our message. The first video involved global warming. It was an English language video that the great Shlomo did. And you know, Shlomo's videos are the gold standard in videos. He makes the best videos. And we exposed in this video the hoax of global warming. You know, when I was a kid in the 1970s, when I was a teenager, they taught us that we are in a period of global freezing. Scientists used to say for years that in fact we're entering into a new ice age, that this is a period of global freezing and it's going to be a catastrophe, and that there's incontrovertible, absolute scientific proof that we're facing global freezing. Then all of a sudden, in the 1980s, they changed direction and they said the exact opposite. After assuring us that there was no doubt that we were in a period of global freezing, that only people who are anti-science would deny that we're in a period of global freezing, they then turned around and told us the exact opposite. Suddenly, we were in a period of global warming. The polar ice caps are going to melt. Cities are going to be flooded with all the water from the polar ice caps. The whole earth is melting. This has been going on now for several decades, the lie of global warming. This is junk science. It's complete nonsense. It is as absurd as when they told us that they were certain that we were in a period of global freezing. And there is a motivation. There is a very sinister motivation behind this campaign to brainwash people into believing that there's something called global warming. Because the United States has the ability to not only become totally energy independent, the United States has the ability to become a net exporter of energy and supply most of the world's energy needs. If the United States and other Western countries would truly tap into their energy capabilities, we would put Muslim terrorist oil-producing countries like Iran and Saudi Arabia out of business. Not only Iran and Saudi Arabia and the Persian Gulf countries, other countries that export oil like Nigeria and Venezuela, and even Russia, which exports oil and natural gas. All countries that are hostile to the United States and the Western world could be put out of business. Can you imagine what a different world this would be if the Muslim terrorist oil-producing countries were not getting trillions of petrodollars? If they did not have the money to build nuclear bombs and weapons of mass destruction? You know, Iran pays for all the technology and everything that they're getting. They pay for it in hard cash. They pay in cold cash for everything they're getting. The Iranians paid in cash to get the Russians and the Chinese and the French and the Germans to build technology and factories and their nuclear reactor. The Iranians paid for the centrifuges that they got from Pakistan. They've been paying, and their program cost them tens of billions of dollars. All of that money comes from oil, from their oil exports. If they didn't have the oil exports, they never would have been able to come anywhere close to developing nuclear bombs. It is solely because of this artificial dependence on foreign oil that the Iranians were able to come to the point where they're now on the verge, God forbid, of building nuclear bombs. Can you imagine if Muslim countries no longer had this? No longer had this money or this ability? Can you imagine if they didn't have the money to fuel their population boom? You know, there's a population boom going on in the Muslim world. And the reason there is one is because of oil money. The oil money enables them to have huge families and loads of babies, which endangers the rest of the world demographically. Imagine if they didn't have all of this oil revenue. If they didn't have this oil revenue, they'd be starving. That would be the end of the population boom. They would have to drastically control their population. They'd have no choice. Countries like Egypt had drastic population and birth control programs in place until Israel gave them all the oil in the Sinai. Israel gave the Egyptians all the oil in the Sinai. Now millions of Arab babies have been born because of the Sinai retreat. If you didn't have the transfer of trillions of dollars from productive, hard-working Western countries to these lazy, parasitic, Muslim terrorist, hateful countries, if you didn't have this massive transfer of wealth, this massive transfer of petrodollars, if Western countries were completely independent of oil, of foreign oil imports, you'd have a completely different dynamic in the world. Totally different. The Arabs would not be able to finance their population boom. They would not have the money to build nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction. Now, Iran already is so close already that they don't need that much more money to finish. God forbid. So with Iran, this program of getting us off of foreign oil wouldn't come fast enough for Iran. For Iran, we have to take military action to stop their nuclear program. But other Muslim countries have indicated that they also want to build nuclear bombs. They wouldn't be able to. They wouldn't be able to if they didn't have oil revenue. Or it would be far more difficult, take far more time for them to be able to do it. Far more difficult. And so it's absolutely essential for national security, for national survival, for the survival of Israel. The more oil money that the Arab countries and the Muslim countries that surround Israel have, the more Israel is in danger. The fact that they have trillions of petrodollars, of course that endangers Israel. It also endangers the economies of the United States and Western countries because these Muslim terrorist oil regimes have so much extra money, have such huge budget surpluses. They use their money to go and buy big companies. They buy shares in big companies. They're buying up the media. So they influence what we're told in the media. They're buying up real estate. They're buying up everything because they have huge budget surpluses as a result of the oil, as a result of the oil money. If we had an America that developed clean coal, for instance, you know that clean coal with the new clean coal technology is actually cleaner than oil. It burns cleaner than oil. It causes less pollution than oil and gasoline. And we have enough coal resources, and I'm talking about accessible coal. We have enough accessible coal resources to supply all of America's energy needs for the next 500 years at least. At least. And we don't use it. We're reducing the amount of coal that we use. We have enough shale oil to supply America's energy needs for the next 1,000 years. If we did fracking and used other techniques to extract the massive oil deposits in the United States. That plus the coal plus all the other energy resources we have would make America not only energy independent, but a net exporter. America could supply the energy needs of most of the world. This would put Muslim terrorist regimes who live on oil money out of business. Can you imagine how much safer the world would be? Can you imagine how much healthier the world would be? You imagine how much better the world would be? But a handful, just a handful of gigantic multinational corporations, multi-billion dollar multinational corporations, who make a fortune dealing with Saudi Arabia and with Iran and with the Persian Gulf and with these other countries. They lobby to prevent America from developing energy independent policies. Or they use these environmental groups through the back door. They fund through foundations and all types of backdoor schemes. They are behind the pseudo-environmental organizations that say, oh, you can't use coal. It's not environmentally sound. We have global warming. And you can't frack. You can't do fracking. It's not environmentally sound. And you can't go after America's huge shale oil deposits. No, we can't do that. It's going to hurt the environment. These pseudo-environmental groups are literally destroying the world by making America and Western countries artificially addicted to Muslim terrorist oil and artificially dependent upon Muslim terrorist oil. They're destroying the world. They're destroying the economy. They're destroying our national security. They're destroying the world. Using their oil power, these Muslim terrorist countries and third world countries demand that the United States open her borders, demand that illegal aliens be legalized and amnesty be given to them, demand that the United States pressure Israel to commit national suicide. On every front, this is such a disaster. It's just something that endangers America on every possible issue you could think of. And it endangers the survival of the whole Western world and certainly endangers Israel. And so our global warming video, the great global warming video that Shlomo did, it's just an example of if only the whole American people were exposed to this message over and over again. I believe we could convince the majority of the American people that this is insane, that we have to stop listening to these liars and to all the mythology out there that they're deliberately spreading. I believe that Americans would respond, and I believe we would have a mass movement, and it would put real pressure on the powers that be to initiate energy policies that make sense, that are sane. I think that could happen if JTF were a mass movement. I really believe that could happen. And then, so that's one video, and I think, again, it demonstrates just how essential JTF is and JTF's message. And then we gave you a Hebrew video about Israeli soldiers. And you see Israeli soldiers in this Hebrew video hiding in a cage that they built, literally hiding in a cage that they built, while Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists are throwing huge rocks at them to try to hurt them or kill them. And they're not even responding. They're just hiding. They're cowering and hiding in this cage that they built, in a metal cage, while they're being stoned mercilessly. And you see 2 minutes of this, and the Arabs are shouting, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. Allah is great. And the soldiers are ordered not to fight back, not to defend themselves, not to fire at the terrorists who are trying to murder them. It's unbelievable. I could tell you that most Israelis who see that video, if every Israeli could see our videos like that one, most Israelis would agree with us. I promise in that video that if we ever take power, I tell the people of Israel that we will give soldiers orders to shoot to kill any Arab Muslim Nazi that dares to raise his hand to throw a rock or a stone. There will be immediate shoot to kill orders. And I can assure you that the majority of Israeli Jews agree with us on that issue. If only we could reach them and organize the people and get them to understand that the leaders they're voting for are the ones that are implementing these horrifying, disastrous policies and tying the hands of Israeli soldiers. If only we could reach them on a massive scale, we wouldn't only change this policy, we would eventually take over the Israeli government. And so, this is what we dream of. We dream of the day when millions of people will see the videos that we showed you this week, in Hebrew and in English, because it would be such a better world if our message got out to millions of people. In the meantime, though, we don't have the money to do that. We don't have the budget to do that. And so, that doesn't mean we should sit on our hands and do nothing. We have to do whatever we can do. We're not allowed to be silent. We got to do the best we can with whatever we have. We're obligated to. We're commanded to do the best we can with whatever we have. And so thousands of people are seeing our videos and getting our message, and I think that's also important. It's not enough. It's not anywhere near enough. But at least we're doing something, and we're reaching people, and we're changing certain people's thinking. And that's important. We're waking a certain number of people up. Let me give you a quick progress report on where we stand, for instance, on Facebook. We have 5 official Facebook pages. We also have unofficial Facebook pages. There are a number of people in the Hebrew and English forums, a number of them, who operate pages, and some of them aren't even on the, and some people who aren't on the forums, who operate pages and who promote our videos and promote our messages. So this is just, these are just 5 of the official pages that we have on Facebook. And here are the figures. And by the way, when I give you these figures, remember, all of these figures, every single person on these lists, get all of our videos, get all of our messages. And it's not just videos. On the Hebrew forum, on the Hebrew Facebook page, it's not just videos. Yes, we do at least 3 Hebrew videos a week. So they get at least 3 Hebrew videos a week if they're signed onto the Facebook page. In other words, if they liked our Facebook page, they get at least 3 Hebrew videos a week. But in addition to that, every single day, the great people on our Hebrew forum, especially Rafo, our great Hebrew admin, Rafo puts up posts and threads on our Hebrew Facebook page every single day with all types of essential facts and information on all types of essential subjects. So people get a continuous flow of information from us, continuous news from us. The Israeli Jews who are on the Hebrew page, they get a continuous flow of information. That's very important. We're educating a generation of people with a new philosophy, a new ideology, and they change. And by the way, after they've been on for a while, suddenly they change their pictures. And you see them put up pictures of Rabbi Kahana, and you see them put up pictures of the star and the fist, and you see them becoming Kahanists after listening to us and after getting all these messages. It's a beautiful sight to see. These are people who weren't born when Rabbi Kahana was preaching what he was preaching. Or some of them weren't born, or some of them were very young. Here are the official statistics. We have 1,522 likes on the Hebrew Facebook page. On my personal Chaim Ben Pesach Facebook page, 1,093 likes. About 80% of them, I would say, at least 80% of them are Israeli Jews. The English JTF Facebook page, 1,028 likes. Our old Romney campaign page. We can't change the name. It has the Romney. It's the Romney Ryan 2012 site, it's called. Stupid Facebook won't allow us to change it. But we're not going to get rid of the page because we have 704 likes. We have 704 people signed on there. Our Ted Cruz presidential campaign page, 337 likes. If you add all of that up, just the 5 official pages that I've given you, just on Facebook, that's 4,684 people. 4,684 people are getting all of our videos every week and all of our messages. Every message that we're posting, every official message that we're posting, and we post, and especially on the Hebrew, for the Hebrew speaking people, we post a lot. Every single week they're getting all of this, all these facts and this information. That's almost 4,684 people, almost 4,700 people. That's just on Facebook. You also know that we have people who visit, you know, a sizable number of people visit both of our forums every week out of curiosity. They visit because they see our videos where we promote the forums. So you'll always see on the bottom, you can see the statistics on the bottom, you'll always see that we have a good number of visitors. And you know that we have thousands of people that are officially signed on to both forums. Most of them are not active, that's true. But a lot of them do read. They do read what's on the forums. They do go to the forum, they do look at it, they do read it, even if they don't even if most of the people don't post. And of course, thousands of people seeing our videos every week on ZooTube. There are several hundred usually for each video, plus, and we have six videos a week, three in Hebrew, three in English, plus, of course, we have a couple of thousand old videos that constantly get a drip, drip, drip of more and more and more people see it on the search engine. And so, you know, you'll have old videos that get three or four new visitors, new people seeing it every week, and you have others that get 10 or 15 new people seeing it every week. So that adds up when you have 2,000 videos up there, 2,000 old videos up there on YouTube. So we're reaching thousands of people with our message. It's not as much as we want. We want millions. It's not nearly enough. But reaching thousands of people with the truth is still something that builds a core movement and that at least changes the minds and the views and the world outlook of at least thousands of people. And I think that's important. I still think that's important. We're not allowed to be silent. We have to reach whoever we can reach. And we're doing that. We're trying as hard as we can and fighting as hard as we can. And I think that's something we can be proud of. Of course, we want to do much more. You can help us. We want to reach more. The more people we reach, the more people we reach with our message, the better the situation will be. And that's why we urge you to help us when you see us putting up Hebrew and English videos on the forum. When you see me put up sticky threads with Hebrew and English videos, it's important that you like and favorite and comment, share and link, and do everything you can to promote those videos both on Facebook and on YouTube. It only takes a few minutes. It's very important to help us. It helps us in the Facebook search engine, the YouTube search engine, the Google search engine. All of those, our videos are in all those search engines, and you help us with all those search engines whenever you take a few minutes to promote the videos. Also, helping us on the forum and helping us on our Facebook pages. When you post, that also goes into the search engines. Especially if you post good threads and good posts, those are things that help us. We want to post things that will be inviting, that will encourage people to join and become active with us, or that will persuade people and educate people. And finally, last but not least, of course, our big downfall is that we don't have the money that we should be getting. We should have the biggest budget of all, because we're telling the truth that no one else will tell. But we don't. And that's why every check, every money order, every cash donation that you send through the regular mail to our post office box, it makes a big difference. It makes a big difference when you help us. God bless the great JTFers who generously help us on a regular basis. It really does make a difference. The more support we have, the more we can do, the more good we can do. And the same is true for the great JTFers who help us with their credit cards online. For some people, it's more convenient to do it with your credit card online. They just have to go to the donate button on the English main page or on the Hebrew main page, and very quickly and securely, you can make a donation to JTF using PayPal, which is something that, of course, is used PayPal and the resources that we use for those donations are resources that are used by all types of big businesses. And within several minutes, it's easy to make a convenient donation to help us reach other people. We urge people to help us. We need your help now more than ever. It's very important to help us. God bless the great JTFers who are doing it. God bless you. God bless your loved ones in this world and in the next. I think we can be proud that we're trying as hard as we can and fighting as hard as we can. We want to do much more. We have to do much more. But in the meantime, we're going to do everything we can and fight as hard as we can to tell the truth and to bring the truth to as many people as we can. Okay, let's get to our questions now. And we start out with the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, discuss Lady, quote-unquote, Antichrist Gaga, and Gaga is spelled Gog, like Gog and Magog, Gog-a, Yimach Shema V'zichra, who openly worships Satan. Might she be Gog, unquote? No, I think Gog has to be a man. The references to him in the biblical prophecies are for a man. So I think that Gog is going to be a male leader of this great superpower that's going to organize the whole world. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, who's more satanic, LG, meaning Lady Gaga, or Helen T. Chamas, instead of Helen Thomas, Helen T. Chamas? Oh, I don't know. They're both absolutely horrific. Thankfully, Helen Thomas is now burning in a very warm place. Lady Gaga, unfortunately, is still around doing the harm that she does and bringing the decadent, degenerate filth that she promotes to many people. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, could Gaga be a human demonic hybrid like the Nephilim, unquote? I don't know what she is. She is certainly an unbelievably weird person. I have no idea what she is. Half man, half woman. I don't know what she is. Half beast. I don't know what she is. She's a very weird person. She's proud to be very weird. She wants to be as weird as possible. She's just a very sick person, and she creates a climate and a culture of sick people, of disgusting sick people. Thank you very much, Lewinsky Stinks. And now we go to our great friend, Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, Dechaim, who is more evil, Alan Greenspan or George Soros? Both are in their 80s, unquote. That's a good question. They both have done a tremendous amount of harm. I would say George Soros is doing more harm now because he's worth $10 or $15 billion, and he uses his money to try to destroy America and Israel. What a sick person he is. When he was a teenager, he helped the Nazis in the Holocaust. He claimed he had no choice, but he helped the Nazis in the Holocaust. Now he certainly has a choice, and he's helping the Nazis now. He promotes anti-Semitism and hatred for Israel. He promotes the most radical left policies in the United States. Almost every evil organization on the left that you could think of in America and in Israel, George Soros helps fund them. Just completely evil. Alan Greenspan, another very evil person, together with his evil wife. Very, very evil, despicable, self-hating Jews. His wife, by the way, Alan Greenspan's wife is Andrea Mitchell, Yimach Shma V'Zichra, the so-called reporter for NBC News and for MSNBC. Such an evil, self-hating Jew. Just a disgusting, horrible person. Thank you, Wanda. But I would say between the two of them, George Soros does the more harm right now because of all of his billions of dollars. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, is there an Israeli president you like? I know you don't like most of them, but there has to be one you like, unquote. Well, I think when you say president, you mean prime minister, because president is only a ceremonial office in Israel. I think you mean the prime ministers. And no, there are no Israeli prime ministers that I like. They're all terrible. It is a miracle that Israel has survived, an unbelievable miracle. They are all terrible. No, I don't like any of them. None of them have done a good job. None of them. It's just the fact. What can I say? Thank you, Joe. And now we're going to the great Chicago Jew who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim and happy Martin Luther King Day. Can you please give a yimach shmo to him, unquote. Absolutely, Martin Luther King, yimach shmo v'zichro. What a phony, what a fake. Boy, did he rip the Jews off, all the stupid, self-hating Jews. Gave him so much money and fought so hard for him. As the great Rabbi Kahana used to say, we gave them civil rights and lost our own. What a nightmare. What a nightmare. Thanks to people like Martin Luther King and all these people that helped, we have Barack Hussein Obama in the White House now. What a nightmare. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to our great friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, who was the lesser of the evils among pre-World War II 20th century Republican presidents, and which one was the worse, unquote. Binyamin, the worst I could tell you, I think, would be Teddy Roosevelt. Let me do the worst, because the lesser of the evils, that's very hard for me to say. I'll explain to you why. But let me give you the worst. First of all, Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt was a so-called Republican president. He was actually elected vice president, and the president was assassinated. Teddy Roosevelt became president, and he eventually was also reelected to the presidency. He was a so-called progressive. He started this with the progressives. And he promoted left-wing policies, big government, and all the other bureaucracy, all the terrible things that we have in our society today. He played a big role in starting a lot of this. He was really a horrific, evil person. And of course, his nephew, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, was responsible for the murder of over 6 million Jews in the Holocaust. So I would say, Teddy being in the White House paved the way for his nephew to be famous and to eventually get into the White House as well. So I would, even though they came from different political parties, doesn't matter. The Roosevelt name was very famous because of this. So I would say that Teddy Roosevelt was the worst Republican president prior to World War II. You could also argue that right after him came maybe Calvin Coolidge, Herbert Hoover, even though a lot of conservatives say they like Calvin Coolidge, but their policies led to the Great Depression, which was a disaster. So I don't know. I don't think that their policies were good policies. Were wise policies at all. The Republican presidents of the 1920s, Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Herbert Hoover. But I think the worst was definitely Teddy Roosevelt. Now, and again, we're talking about Republican presidents prior to World War II. Okay, that's before there was a State of Israel, that's before World War II, before Franklin Delano Roosevelt was in the White House. Prior to all of this, Teddy Roosevelt, I say, was the worst. Now, you're also asking who was the lesser of the evils. That's very hard for me to answer, Binyamin, because you had quite a few Republican presidents. Abe Lincoln was the first Republican president. And then after the Civil War, you had one Republican president after another, and right up until the end of the 19th century, and really up until FDR, until the Great Depression, most presidents were Republicans. The only exceptions were Andrew Jackson, who became president when Lincoln was assassinated. He was vice president. He became president when Lincoln was assassinated. He was a Democrat. And Grover Cleveland was elected twice to the presidency. He was a Democrat. Woodrow Wilson was elected twice to the presidency. He was a Democrat. That's thanks to Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt and William Howard Taft ran against each other, split the Republican vote, so Woodrow Wilson got in. And that was it. Aside from, I think that's it. I think it was just Andrew Jackson, Grover Cleveland, and Woodrow Wilson. They were the only Democrat presidents for a period of about 80 years of American history. All the other presidents were Republican. So I don't know all of the intricate information about every Republican president to be able to say who was the lesser of the evils. I just don't know enough, Binyamin, to make that judgment. I just I have to plead ignorance here. I don't know enough to be able to say definitively who was the lesser of the evils. My opinion wouldn't be worth very much because my opinion is not well informed enough. Thank you, Binyamin, but I explained to you why I thought I do have enough. I do know enough to know that Teddy Roosevelt, he was, in my opinion, the worst because of all the damage that he did that we explained before. Thank you, Binyamin. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, I know Bonnie Pector betrayed the Rav and the JDL, but how did she get involved in the first place? Unquote. Russ Kellner, who is a very good Jew, started the Philadelphia JDL. He became the head of the Philadelphia JDL and was a very loyal supporter of Rabbi Kahana. And I worked with Russ in the 1970s, a great guy, wonderful person. She joined because she liked Russ Kellner. And she joined, she was from Philadelphia, Bonnie Pector, and she joined the Philadelphia JDL, became active in Philadelphia JDL. Unfortunately, she eventually took over the Philadelphia JDL, and she managed to take over when Russ Kellner came to New York, because Russ Kellner came to New York and was appointed by Rabbi Kahana to run JDL in New York in the 1970s. When Russ Kellner moved to New York to run JDL in New York, Bonnie Pector took over Philadelphia JDL. And that was the beginning of the disastrous entrance of Bonnie Pector into JDL's organizational organizational structure. Eventually, Bonnie Pector took over JDL nationally. Rabbi Kahana was too busy to stop it. He was busy running for the Knesset. He was in Israel. He was tied up. He couldn't from Israel. He just couldn't control the situation here. She was able to take over. And she did terrible things. Of course, she put ads in the Jerusalem Post condemning Rabbi Kahana, held press conferences condemning him. She and the people that she stacked on the JDL executive board voted Rabbi Kahana out. They voted him and they said they're throwing him out of the JDL. They threw him out. Can you imagine the chutzpah of this beast? She did such terrible things. Now, I was just a teenager when all of this was happening. This was in the 1970s. I was a teenager. And I wanted to stop it and I wanted to fight against it. But eventually I had legal problems as well because of my activities on behalf of Soviet Jewry and because of my activities against the Sinai retreat when the Sinai was being handed over to Egypt. So I had legal problems, so I couldn't do everything that I wanted to do. And so she was able to get away with a lot of things for a couple of years. She was running JDL and really, really did terrible damage to the organization and really hurt Rabbi Kahana. Really hurt his standing and undermined everything that he wanted to do. When I was arrested, she wrote to my judge and urged my judge to give me the maximum penalty. So she's that under Jewish law, that makes her an informer, that makes her a complete traitor, and she's worthy of the curse that we use to curse traitors three times a day. She urged the judge to give me the maximum penalty. She urged the judge to give my co-defendant Bruce Berger the maximum penalty. And tried to write all types of damaging things against us. It didn't work. I mean, the judge didn't, I don't think he took seriously what she was saying, but she tried her best to hurt Jews who were facing sentences for trying to help the Jewish people. And that's treason. You don't do that to Jews who were facing prison terms because they wanted to save Soviet Jews, because they wanted to help Israel, because they wanted to stop the Sinai retreat. And you write to the judge and tell the judge to give these Jews the maximum penalty. I mean, that's the ultimate treason, and that's what she did. So, you know, she was a complete and absolute traitor, and she got involved by getting involved first in the local chapter. Thank you, Kahana loyalist. And now we go to the great Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, How does Judaism view husbands who cheat on their wives with single women, unquote? That's znut. That's prostitution. It's completely forbidden. Absolutely not allowed. Adultery is even more serious. You know, when you commit, you have a husband and then he goes with a woman who's also married, that's even more serious, but still, a husband who has a relationship with other women, other than his wife, that's a very serious sin. And now Smash Islam writes, are husbands allowed to remarry without giving wife a get? Okay, let me explain to people. A get is a Jewish halachic divorce under Jewish law. It's a divorce that you give, that a wife receives under Jewish law. No, husbands are not allowed to remarry if they don't give their wife a get. If the husband is not divorced, the husband cannot remarry and the wife cannot remarry. Neither one of them can remarry until they are officially divorced, which means that the wife has a get. And now Smash Islam writes, are they allowed to blackmail their wives to give a get? Unquote. Oh, of course not. Of course not. You're not allowed to blackmail, and you're not allowed to do dishonest and cruel things. You're not allowed to do that, of course. Of course not. If a husband blackmails his wife, the Beit Din, the rabbinic court, is allowed to order people to go out and beat him. And literally give him a beating to teach him a lesson for doing that to his wife. That's Jewish law. And now Smash Islam writes, and I quote, P.S. Give eulogy to Amiri Baraka, unquote. Oh, Amiri Baraka is the black Jew hater and racist whose real name was Leroy Jones. Mm-hmm. My name be Leroy. Mm-hmm. And he used to speak in front of Jewish, mostly Jewish audiences in Greenwich Village and in Lower Manhattan. And he would say, you know, I'm tired of you cats talking about the 6 million Jews all the time. 6 million cats were killed in the Holocaust. So what? I mean, so what? Do you know how many black people were killed in the slave trade? Billions. Billions of black people were thrown over and killed in the Atlantic Ocean. Billions of black people. Billions and billions of black people. Mm-hmm. And this genius, this great genius, would speak in front of Jewish college students, university students, really, and Jews, and by the way, Jewish kids, when he was speaking and making these speeches in the 60s, 1960s, and the 1970s, Jewish kids were very smart in those days. I mean, those days, they were brilliant. They were very well educated. This is before, you know, this is before the complete effects of affirmative action and the dumbing down of the American public. I mean, the Jewish kids were geniuses. And these brilliant Jewish kids, you could be brilliant and insane, by the way. Let's make it very clear. You could be brilliant and still be a leftist. You could be an insane, brilliant person. These well-educated Jewish kids would sit and listen. I mean, these were Jewish intellectuals. And they would sit and listen to this babbling baboon go on and on. Billions of black people was killed, yeah! You talk about the 6 million cats that were killed? Billions of black people, what about them? Them, you never talk about that. Mm-hmm. And they'd sit and listen to this and applaud him and give him a standing ovation at the end. I mean, how insane. How insane. And the greatest speaker that I ever heard in my lifetime, Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, if he wanted to speak to these great Jewish intellectuals, you think they'd give him a standing ovation? They were applauding someone who was an anti-Semite, who was cursing them and making fun of the 6 million being murdered in the Holocaust. This low, jealous, ugly piece of subhuman dirt. And they applauded him. What a sick people. Sick. Sick. Now you see how Obama gets over 70% of the Jewish vote in two elections while he's pressuring Israel to commit suicide. Sick. What a sick people. Anyway, that's my eulogy for Amiri Baraka, a.k.a. Leroy Jones. Yamach shmo v'zichro shem reshaim yirkav. May his name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we now go to our great friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, would a Kahanist government allow the Pope to visit Israel? Unquote. Well, you know, I would, if I were prime minister, I would, if it's understood that he's going to come and see me and we could speak publicly to each other, that would be great. I would love to tell him What a chutzpah you have, telling Israel to commit suicide after everything the church did to the Jewish people for 2,000 years. After pogroms and inquisitions and holocausts and expulsions and forced conversions and kidnapping six-year-old Jewish boys and kidnapping them and putting them in the Vatican to serve the Pope. That's what they did to Italian Jewish boys. And ordering the Jews be stuffed into ghettos. And ordering the Jews wear the yellow star. You know the yellow star in the Holocaust? The Vatican ordered that centuries earlier. Hitler and the Nazis didn't originate that. And now he's going to Israel in May to tell the Jews to give up the one little homeland they have? The chutzpah. The chutzpah. I would love to have him come to Israel and visit me in Israel. I'd say, but we have to invite all the TV cameras in and have a dialogue in front of everybody. And let him tell me about so-called Palestinians and all this other BS. I'd like to see him tell me that. But of course, Maimonides, he would never come if Chaim ben Pesach were prime minister. Thank you, Maimonides. And I want to thank everybody for another show that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.